Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Living Better in San Diego, a public service presentation of the Entercom San Diego radio stations. I'm Gary Lee. Since its inception, the AIDS Healthcare Foundation has generated new, innovative ways of treatment and advocacy for HIV and AIDS. They're able to do this through a network of pharmacies, thrift stores, healthcare contracts, and other strategic partnerships. Joining us this morning is AIDS Healthcare Foundation San Diego Healthcare Center Medical Director, Dr. Adam Zweig. Welcome, Dr. Zweig.
Thanks, Gary. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's start with a little background information, if we could, on the AIDS Healthcare Foundation. Now, you're a national organization, right?
We're a national organization. We have a little over 50 offices in the United States. We also have another 700 offices or so throughout the world.
And the mission or goal?
Well, our mission statement is cutting-edge medicine without regard of ability to pay. I think our goal is multi-pronged, but it's in general to get as many people throughout the world to know their status and get on treatment.
Now, the healthcare center here in San Diego, fairly new, isn't it?
It's fairly new. We opened it towards the end of 2014, so less than 5 years.
And where are you located?
We're located in Hillcrest, 3940 4th Avenue, near the corner of University and 4th.
And the San Diego AHF Pharmacy, and you have a separate pharmacy, and that's located in the same building as you?
That's correct. Part of our strategy when we open a healthcare center in a particular city is to have a co-located pharmacy. That does a couple of things. First of all, that allows us to have patients basically do one-stop shopping. So if a medication is prescribed by the doctors, then they only have to walk right next door to obtain that prescription. If there are any issues with the medication, such as pharmacy coverage, copay issues, et cetera, then the pharmacists are right there to consult with the doctor. So that's pretty nice to have that arrangement. In addition, we are a nonprofit, and the revenues that the pharmacy generates go back into our healthcare center to allow us to see patients who are uninsured or underinsured.
So people that are uninsured or cannot afford insurance, is there a cost for them, or is it sliding scale?
So if someone is HIV positive or turns out to be HIV positive, we see them for free, and we get labs. They see the doctor. We prescribe medication, and we do our best to get them on insurance so the next time that they see us, they will be covered. And there is a insurance entity called Ryan White. Ryan White is an insurance of last resort that is funded by the federal and state government to take care specifically of patients with HIV who don't have insurance. So we use that and get those patients enrolled in that insurance.
And how about a little background on you? What is your specialty?
My specialty is internal medicine. So I was trained as an internal medicine physician. However, I saw a lot of patients with HIV infection when I was in residency in Arizona in 1992. And obviously that was part of the, shall we say, battle days of HIV and AIDS, with a lot of young men and women dying of kind of weird diseases and weird malignancies. And that spiked my interest in HIV, and I've been doing that ever since. So I am an internal medicine physician with a subspecialty of HIV medicine.
And now the center, what are the hours?
Our healthcare center is open daily from 8:30 in the morning to 5:30 in the afternoon, and we close for lunch between 12:20 and 1:20.
And is it by appointment only, or do you take walk-ins?
It's by appointment only currently.
So a lot has changed. There's been a lot of progress over the years since we first heard about AIDS and HIV. My brother passed away from AIDS in 1995, and back then they were just given the AZT package.
Right. So once again, I mentioned the bad old days of HIV, and we consider the time before those life-saving drugs were available. to be one of the first era of HIV treatment. So that was about 1984-85 when HIV was first sort of discovered, through 1995. And during that time, we had monotherapy and dual therapy available with a class called nucleosides. And we didn't know it at that time, but the virus rapidly developed resistance against those medications. So typically, if someone was on therapy before 1996, they were either on monotherapy or dual therapy with just a few drugs that we had. The most famous one is AZT, but we would combine that with another one called DDI or D4T, really didn't accomplish much in terms of improving quality or quantity of life at that time.
And now, though, you have, again, progress has been made. You've got a drug called PrEP, right?
Well, there's a difference between HIV treatment and HIV prevention. So if we're talking about HIV treatment, the next step that happened after 1995 and 1996 was the first development of what's called a protease inhibitor. And we could combine the protease inhibitor with the previous drugs that I mentioned to develop something called highly active antiretroviral therapy. So in 1996, that was the first time highly active antiretroviral therapy, or HART, was available. And all of a sudden, people who were dying with HIV started living with HIV. And over the 20 years since 1996 or so, the death rate from HIV fell about 90%. Truly amazing. I don't know of any other infectious disease or malignancy that really inspired so much work and so much progress to be done so quickly. And that is opposed to HIV prevention. That's for people who are HIV negative. And there is a medication right now that we have that someone who is at risk for HIV acquisition can take daily. It's called Truvada. Truvada is one pill taken daily that contains two medicines. It was approved for the treatment of HIV in 2001. In 2012, however, it was approved for the prevention of HIV. So basically, that's where we are right now. We have two different sets of patients that we see that we prescribe medication for. Patients who are already diagnosed with HIV infection have already acquired HIV, and we put them on treatment. And up till now, treatment has comprised of at least three active medicines, as opposed to prevention of HIV. And right now, someone who is at risk for HIV acquisition and taking Truvada is on two medicines. So there's a difference between the number of medicines we use for treatment of HIV compared to prevention of HIV.
And then Truvada, that's the prevention medicine, that, and that's PrEP?
Correct. Don't forget that Truvada can also be used in combination with another medicine for treatment of HIV.
Okay.
Right now, the only medicine that we have for prevention of HIV is Truvada. That will change soon, however. But right now, the only medication we have is Truvada.
What does PrEP stand for?
PrEP stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis. So if you want to talk about that, if someone is at risk for HIV acquisition, there's certain definitions of people who we think are traditionally at risk for HIV. We can talk about that, I guess. So those would include men who have sex with men, not only men who identify as gay, but also men who might identify as bisexual or even heterosexual, but still might be sexually active occasionally or frequently with men. And if they're not using condoms consistently, then that person is obviously at risk for HIV acquisition. So men who have sex with men and are not using condoms consistently, that would be someone who would be at risk for HIV acquisition. Someone who is injecting IV drugs or recreational drugs, that person would be at risk for HIV acquisition and be a candidate for PrEP. Sex trade workers. I should take that back. Not necessarily just sex trade workers. Anybody who exchanges sex for something else, whether it might be money or it might be housing or it might be recreational drugs, etc. So someone who engages in sexual activity for remuneration would be at risk and be also someone who would be a candidate for PrEP. And then finally would be someone who's sexually active with a person that's known to have HIV.
So how effective is PrEP?
That's a really good question. And there are different ways of expressing effectiveness. The initial trials that got Truvada approved for prevention of HIV were called the IPREX trials. They were centered in San Francisco, but done in many countries. And the initial efficacy of Truvada was probably about in the mid-40s, so probably about 45% or so, which doesn't really sound that great, right? But it turns out that many of those patients who were enrolled in the PrEP arm were not taking the medicine. And because we can tell pretty quickly if somebody's taking the medication or not. There was a new technology available whereby a dried blood spot, we could prick somebody's, we can prick somebody's finger, get a little bit of blood, determine whether somebody is actually taking the medication or not. So a good percentage of those patients who are enrolled in the treatment arm were actually not compliant and not taking the medicine. So by extrapolation, we think that if somebody takes their medication every day, that it's anywhere between 95 and 99% effective, which is pretty amazing.
That's great.
There's only been a few reported cases recently that we know of where somebody has acquired HIV and been compliant with medication. And those cases aren't necessarily well defined of why it happened. But I don't want to dwell on that because I want people to realize how effective this really is and not be scared off by any other numbers that they might see. If someone is at risk for acquiring HIV and he or she is on Truvada and they take their medicine every day, I can confidently say they're not going to get HIV.
What about side effects?
Yeah, so Truvada does have some side effects. There's short and long-term effects. So short-term, some patients who take Truvada can get stomach upset, nausea, diarrhea, etc. Long-term side effects are two, basically. It can cause bone loss or osteoporosis and can cause kidney dysfunction. So those are two rare but real side effects, and the longer someone takes the medication, the more likely it is for them to develop a long-term side effect. So I don't think we necessarily are planning on someone to be on this medicine forever. If somebody is at risk, we hope that their risk eventually either goes away or goes down considerably, and then we can take that person off Truvada. For instance, if they enter into a monogamous relationship, if they successfully go through drug rehab, etc.
And it's only available by prescription, right?
Truvada currently is only available by prescription. I'd like people to realize, though, that you don't necessarily have to have insurance to be able to acquire this. There is a California state program called PrEP Assistance Program. Only a few states in the country have this, but if somebody is truly at risk for HIV acquisition, there are a few places in San Diego County that will be able to enroll the patient in this program, and PrEP app pays for the office visit, pays for the labs that are required. And then we get the medication through the manufacturer, Gilead. They have something called a patient assistance program, which pays for the medication. So if somebody has insurance, great. If they're at risk, they can go to their physician and see about him or her doing the necessary procedures to get and labs to get them on PrEP. Or if they don't do it themselves, they usually have someone they can refer the patient to. If for some reason your doctor or your medical facility does not offer PrEP, then you can come to us or a couple of other centers in San Diego County. And it's also good to know that if someone does not have insurance, they don't have to go without PrEP. We can get it for them, and there are certain other agencies in San Diego County also that have a PrEP app contract right now, and I can say those. If you'd like me to, those San Ysidro Health Center, Owen Clinic in San Diego, North County Health Services in San Marcos, and Family Health Centers also in San Diego.
Well, that's good. That's good to know. Tell us about the U equals U campaign.
Sure. U equals U is a somewhat new concept. There were a couple of large studies done looking at discordant couples. Discordance in this context means one member of the couple is HIV positive and the other member is HIV negative. A large study done and released in Amsterdam at the International AIDS Conference that was last summer, so the summer of 2018, looked at gay male couples who had to be sexually active without condom use or PrEP use. And the HIV-positive partner was on medication and had an undetectable viral load. So let me explain what an undetectable viral load means. An undetectable viral load means that when we draw someone's blood, we can't detect virus in their serum. Typically, with most assays, that means that the viral load, the number of viral particles, is less than 20 per milliliter of blood. So we call that undetectable or suppressed. They both mean the same thing. So in this large study called the PARTNER 2 trial, there were, after 48 weeks, there were no transmissions. So even though these couples were sexually active, having multiple sexual episodes per month, and the HIV negative partner was unprotected, meaning there was no condom use and no PrEP use allowed, there were no transmissions, at the end of 48 weeks. Because of that, we can state that if someone is HIV positive and on medication and has an undetectable viral load, he or she will not be able to transmit to someone else. There's never been a reportable case of that happening. So we want to try to get out the concept of U equals U for a number of reasons. Number one, we hope that if someone with HIV realizes that he or she will not be able to transmit to their partner, or partners, that will perhaps make him or her more compliant with their care, meaning to show up to their appointments and to take their medicine every day. The second thing we hope that it accomplishes is to reduce the stigma that's typically attached to HIV. There is a lot of stigma attached to HIV within the gay community and certainly in the heterosexual community as well. And that stigma is incredibly destructive. It prevents people at risk from seeing their doctor, from getting tested, etc. And we'd like to reduce it to get more people into care and get more people on medication and to make the lives better of the people who have HIV itself.
Now, the stigma, it's lessened over the years, but it's still pretty prevalent, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much it's lessened. I mean, there's no way to really necessarily quantify
right.
that, right? So perhaps, but there's still a lot of people who aren't well educated about HIV and the way it transmits. And I see a lot of patients who are directly affected by stigma, whether it be issues with their partner, their friends, their job security, etc. It's very prevalent and very destructive. And I think that the stigma is basically what propels continued transmissions of HIV. I mean, look, we know that of U equals U. So somebody who takes their medication will not transmit HIV. We call that as well treatment as prevention. Someone who's at risk, we have medication to prevent them from acquiring HIV. That's called Truvada or PrEP. So we have two very, very potent, powerful ways to prevent people from getting HIV, from HIV to transmit. And yet we still see transmission rates that have not gone down. If anything, are increasing to some degree in certain patient groups, certain at-risk groups. And therefore, we think that a lot of that is related to the stigma attached to HIV.
Yeah, because as you mentioned, the stigma is keeping people from actually going and seeing a doctor.
Right, right, exactly. Stigma is part of that. Fear and is
right.
also a big part of that. So, yes, stigma is a very large part of that.
What are you seeing at the center as far as most at-risk communities here in the San Diego area?
Yeah, so unfortunately, a lot of the communities that are at risk are not the people that I'm seeing, and that's part of the issue. Hmm. So I think in general, the most at-risk patient populations throughout the country are youth, so people under the age of, say, let's say 22, so 15-year-olds to 22-year-olds, men of color, so the Latino population, African-American population, women in general, especially women of color, and injection drug users. These are the patient populations that we find it very, very difficult to get into their office. And there's a number of reasons for that. Number one, the communities of these people at risk may not be well served by medical care. There might not be very many medical offices available. patients may not have insurance. And if they don't have insurance, they may not think that they have the ability to go see a doctor or a nurse practitioner or a physician's assistant. Even if they do have insurance, they may not think that they can afford the copay for the office visit or the medication. A lot of people, it's related to education. They may not know that they're at risk or realize that they're at risk. And then, two, for a lot of the people that I've mentioned, it may just not be a high priority. If you're using injection drugs, your highest priority might be to get your next fix and not necessarily to go seek medical care. Same thing if you have psychosocial issues, if you're homeless, or if you have three kids at home and need to figure out how you're going to make ends meet.
Education and awareness. Still needed so much on this front.
Yes, and how do we reach these groups? We don't really know. It does take thinking outside of the box because obviously, and especially in these at-risk groups, we're not doing a great job of reducing the transmission rate.
So what's happening on the research front? Any new medications, treatments, therapies that are being worked on?
We've really achieved, I think, the holy grail in terms of HIV oral medications. I remember back in the late 90s, early 2000s, we were using medicine at that time that really saved people's lives, but they were really tough to take. People had to take maybe 8 pills and capsules 3 times a day. They had nausea and vomiting associated with it, peripheral neuropathy, meaning issues with tingling in their feet associated with it. Some of the meds that needed to be refrigerated. Some shouldn't be refrigerated. Some of the meds needed to be taken with food. Others couldn't be taken with food. So it was very, very difficult to comply with those regimens. In 2006, a medication was approved called Atripla. Atripla was our first single tablet regimen for HIV infection. And that was basically it, what we were waiting for. A treatment regimen, therefore, went from about 24 pills and capsules in 1996. 10 years later, became one pill once a day. So that one pill once a day still contained three medicines. Yet it was infinitely easy to take. Right? It was one pill once a day without food at night. But the issue is that it still had some side effects. And we've gotten to a point now where almost all our patients that we see now can be treated with one pill once a day. Truly amazing when you think about it compared to where we were in 1996 or even before that to where we are now. Yeah. So one pill once a day. Most of these that we use now can be taken with food or without food. They can be taken any time of day or night. Their side effect profile is so amazing that it's getting to be sort of similar to taking Tylenol. I don't want to say it's exactly like that, but they are extremely well tolerated by most people. Therefore, there's not much room to go right now in terms of improvement in HIV medication. That being said, there are some new fronts and new developments. Number one is currently we use three active drugs to treat most patients with HIV infection. Even though it's one tablet once a day, there are three medications in that pill. There's sort of a push now that maybe we don't need three medicines, that maybe we can get away with only using two active drugs instead of three to treat HIV. This is sort of a new paradigm, if you will, in HIV therapy, so it hasn't necessarily caught on, but that's probably going to be something that we'll see in the future. In addition, fairly soon we'll see injectable medications for HIV. Right now we only have, pretty much only have oral. There are rare instances where an injection can be used, but almost 99% of patients are on oral medicines. So we anticipate we will have approval of our first intramuscular injectable formulation for HIV available relatively soon. And when this medication is approved, it will actually be two medicines, two injections given once monthly. And there's a number of patients that don't do well with HIV pills for one reason or another. They have some type of pill phobia, or the pills are too big, and they may have issues with compliance because they have to take pills. Or they may not remember. They may not remember to take a medication every day. For that patient population, this development of injectable medications is pretty exciting. And once again, we should have that available within the next few months. The other relatively new things that are coming on are going to be long-acting medications. So perhaps instead of taking one pill once a day, we will be able to have someone take a pill once every week or so. So they'll have combine medications that have very long half-life, so they're able to do that. Finally, and this is farther out, will be the development of an implantable medication, something similar to Norplant, which is a contraceptive option for women where the device is implanted in the forearm and changed once a year or so. So there is the possibility that we may be able to develop a treatment program, medications in this implantable system that can be easily inserted in the forearm and then changed perhaps once a year or so. That's way down the line. But these are sort of the things that are in development right now to improve HIV treatment. Even though we have, or somebody say HIV medication, even though we have these great meds available right now and they're well tolerated and easy to take, a good percentage of patients that are even engaged in care don't have undetectable viral loads. And one of the reasons for that is because of medication noncompliance. And we hope that these new developments improve compliance with HIV medication.
Well, that's some great news. Unfortunately, we are out of time.
One last time,
the okay. AIDS Healthcare Foundation San Diego Healthcare Center, located where?
It's located 3940 4th Avenue.
And hours of operation?
8:30 to 5:30 daily.
All right. Adam, thank you so much for being on the show today.
And, thank you.
For all you do.
It's been a pleasure.
At the AIDS Healthcare Foundation and the AHF Healthcare Center here in San Diego. It's appreciated.
My pleasure.
That concludes another edition of Living Better in San Diego. The opinions expressed on Living Better in San Diego do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of the Entercom San Diego radio stations. Episodes of Living Better in San Diego are available on this station's website. Join me next week when my guest will be from the San Diego Rescue Mission. Until then, I'm Gary Lee. Have a great week.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.